I'm Harry, digital marketer by day, crypto enthusiast by night.
And I'm Mel, a new kid on the blockchain.
Join our convos breaking down the basics of digital assets so that you can understand the world of cryptocurrency.
Strap in for a wild ride into the cryptoverse. Hey everyone, it's another episode of Step Into the Cryptoverse. Wow, that's a tongue twister pala. First of all, thank you for listening to our first episode about NFTs. We had so much good feedback. Also feedback from Yosu. He was appalled by how Konyo he sounded. And he promised in the next time he'll guest, he will sound less Spanish. But yeah, Harry, hello. Please introduce our guest.
We have an exciting episode for you guys. We have a real OG in this space. No? He's been in the space for so long in the early days, and he started a company. And you know, he's worked with the government on helping us with regulations and advising them. So we have Miguel Coneta here, co-founder of SCI, or Satoshi Citadel Industries.
Yeah, so I actually started out in another industry that's also kind of like high risk and a little bit, it was a little bit new at the time when we started it. I actually met my co-founder Jardine playing poker in the early 2000s, and we started the first poker club, one of the first poker clubs in the Philippines. And it eventually led to the first PAGCOR approved, accredited poker club outside of a casino in the Philippines. So I don't know if you've played poker there. It's in MetroWalk, called the Metro Card Club. It's very interesting because that's how I got introduced to Bitcoin, because towards, I think around 2013, early 2013, some of the poker players that played at the Metro played online poker on a website called Seals with Clubs. And it was the first Bitcoin poker website. So you would use Bitcoin to buy in and play the games and cash out Bitcoin. And my friend back then, he was like, you should check out this Bitcoin thing. Like, go on Reddit, go on like Bitcoin Talk, and check it out. You're going to find it interesting. I started looking into Bitcoin. I think the price was $30 per Bitcoin. And it went all the way to like $200. I didn't buy anything. I was just observing. And then it crashed back to 50. So I was like, whew, it's a good thing I didn't get into that Ponzi scheme, right? But I looked deeper into it and fell into the proverbial rabbit hole and, you know, never looked back. Like, it just, that's when we started the SEI, like a few months later after that. And here we are, like 8 years later, still working in the Bitcoin industry.
New to the Oxford Dictionary 1600.
A digital currency in which transactions can be performed without the need for a central bank. Woody,
what is a Bitcoin?
Yes.
Obviously, we are going to talk about Bitcoin. It's everyone is, I feel like everywhere I go or every forum I enter, there's always like a BTC something being mentioned. So it's really a hot, I think crypto in general in 2021 is pretty insanely hot. But let's bring it down to the basics first between you and Harry. Can you explain what Bitcoin is with only three sentences?
Let's go by the textbook definition. Bitcoin is a peer-to-peer electronic cash system. And it's very important, you know, to break that down, right? And maybe we'll go deeper into that later. But also, you know, this system, right, is really just a network of computers that are constantly reaching agreement, like getting consensus over the state of a shared database. So it's a network of computers that reach agreement over the state of a shared database, which is what's called the blockchain.
I would just give three qualities of Bitcoin, specifically Bitcoin and the blockchain is. One is, if you remember from our first episode, we kept on saying the word verify. I think this, you know, number one, Bitcoin changes the concept of how we trust or how we verify. You know, we always say in the space, don't trust, verify. And that's something that Bitcoin changes. Number two, no one person controls it or has the power over it. And number three, it's permissionless and unstoppable. No one can censor a transaction. No central authority can stop someone from sending Bitcoin to another person.
You know, when it comes to Bitcoin and crypto also, there's this one word that keeps getting thrown around, and it is decentralization. And I don't think that concept is really clear to most people. And Miguel and Harry, maybe you guys can break it down for us some more. Like, what exactly does decentralized currency or decentralized something mean?
Every form of money that we have, be it digital or fiat currency, is all relies on a centralized data. All the money we've ever used online, there's always a middleman. There's always like somebody that has to monitor the transaction, you know, like know the participants and everything. So Bitcoin is decentralized because it doesn't need a central authority.
Imagine when you're like withdrawing from your ATM, you see all these logos like BankNet. Essentially, these are middlemen. Or if you're going to send money, you know, you'll need a middleman like Western Union. Bitcoin changes that. And the concept is, yun nga, like Miguel said, walang centralized authority or database needed to reconcile different parties. Parang I don't need to know your bank or my bank doesn't need to know your bank. As long as you have a Bitcoin address, which is available with your wallet, you can send to anyone and you can store. And you know, the network, like Miguel said, would verify all these things na as true.
Let's just say, I'll compare it to, let's say, Napster versus Torrent, like BitTorrent, right? Napster is a centralized file sharing system. So when the government went after it, it was easily shut down. But BitTorrent is a decentralized file sharing system and nobody can shut it down, because you shut down one node, you know, 10 others will appear. And that's really the power of decentralization. It makes it unstoppable.
You know, as a person who really, really hates banking in the Philippines, like I avoid it like the plague. If I can avoid going to the bank, utusan ko na lang sino or makikisabay ako sa banko. I hate it so much. Is Bitcoin a result of some sort of rebellion against these institutions?
Yeah, Miguel, no, if you remember, kanina, the textbook definition Miguel gave is a quote from the white paper of Satoshi, the pseudonym that created Bitcoin.
Bitcoin was invented, the Bitcoin white paper, which is like the thesis of Bitcoin, was published in 2008. And in January 3rd of 2009, the software was launched, basically given away to the world for free, right? For anyone to download as open source. And on the first block, on the first transaction of Bitcoin, in the first transaction of the blockchain, there is literally a text there. You can add a certain number of bytes of data on each block. And it says, it was the headline of the Times that said, "Chancellor on the brink of second bailout for banks." So it was a timestamp and also kind of like a statement, right? Because we just got screwed over by the banks in 2008. And without all the bailouts, a lot of them would have gone down the toilet, but they were bailed out. And Bitcoin is kind of like something that emerged out of the market as a response to that. The people needed something like this. They needed something that would let them opt out of that system, do financial transactions, you know, transfers of value, storing value on their own without relying on banks.
I'm getting goosebumps just listening to Miguel talk about it. I think this is why people like me are, you know, sobrang enthusiastic about Bitcoin. And we really got addicted, and you know, we're so geeky about it. We really
it's a market. It emerged, you know, naturally, like organically. Nobody asked for this. People have been trying to create Bitcoin for a long time. This is not something that just came out of the woodwork, you know, but it all fails because it either gets shut down or it just doesn't work. Like nobody could figure out the right formula.
Yeah, if you remember, Mark Zuckerberg, Facebook tried to come up with their own quote-unquote cryptocurrency.
They got shut down right away, right?
It got shut down by the government because you could subpoena the creators. With Bitcoin, there is no creator, there's no CEO. We're all, diba? We all are part. There's no one single person ruling. We are all rulers of the network, diba? Every participant.
Bitcoin follows certain rules, like every 210,000 blocks, their block reward will be cut in half. And if you want to invent new rules, you can do that. That's not, nobody's actually stopping you from creating new rules in Bitcoin, but you'll end up with a different chain. That's why we have different kinds of Bitcoin, like Bitcoin Cash, Bitcoin Gold, and that's why we have different kinds of altcoins. They all came from Bitcoin. You have to understand that the entire crypto scene right now is only possible because Bitcoin opened up that Pandora's box. And all these years, you know, Bitcoin is still the number one cryptocurrency in the world. It's actually in a class of its own, I think. It's not, you can't really group it with other cryptocurrencies. We're talking about Bitcoin right now at $60,000, but remember, the first couple of years, it's not like everybody started to embrace Bitcoin right away. People rejected it. People thought it would never work. People laughed about it. Nobody cared. People were giving away Bitcoins like, you know, nothing. And people were throwing away hard drives with 10,000 Bitcoins because they were worthless for the first 2 years.
I miss those days. I remember that's when I met John. And then that's when Jardine also approached and were saying, we'll pay you in Bitcoin. And I was like, what are you guys talking about? That's like some imaginary money that you're throwing at me. Can you guys share like your worst scam experience personally? Go.
In the early days, there were no exchanges. You could sign up for Mt. Gox maybe, or these foreign exchanges that were like super shady. So the only way to buy really was to look for people online on localbitcoins.com, you know, chat with them, connect with them, meet up somewhere, or deposit money in their bank account and hope, you know, they send you the Bitcoin. We met the founders of coins.ph, also one of the first Bitcoin companies in the Philippines, one of the most successful ones right now. We met them actually online and met up with them and gave them cash so they could sell Bitcoin to us. It was like this, right? And one time I remember I bought around 1.5 Bitcoins for like 15,000 pesos.
Grabe.
And this guy was like, oh, I'll give you a discount. you know, I'll give you a little bit more. Why don't you just like deposit the money in my bank account and let's not use the escrow system?
Oh my God.
I'm like, such an idiot, right? Like, so I sent the money and he never stopped. He actually stopped responding and never answered my calls. And I called the bank and they were like, sorry, we cannot help you with that. If he's a client, we have to protect this information. You know, we have to protect our client. So it was like a lesson learned. But it's a good thing it was only 15,000 pesos. Although now, that would be $90,000. So,
wow.
Damn. Ako naman sa futures, no? So there are trading apps now that has this thing called futures. It's may same concept rin sa stocks, eh. Pero iba yung leverage sa crypto, eh. Like you can do like 100x or more, which means you're highly leveraged. So sobrang higher yung stakes. And you can either make so much money or lose all your money in a short amount of time. And dyan ako nadali. I was thinking, you know, at first few tries, uy, I made, you know, easy money. Yun pala, I'll end up losing more. So I stay away from those. And I advise, you know, listeners of ours who are trying to get into this to only use those products if you really study it and not to invest money na you're not willing to lose.
Hi, little girl. What brings you to see Uncle Krusty?
Krusty, are you broke?
Yeah, all it takes is some bad luck at the ponies. Worse luck in the Bitcoin market.
I guess like in trading, in like stocks trading, you're either a trader who watches the monitor all day or an investor who just buys and then just keeps the whole thing until he feels the need to sell. It's the same with Bitcoin, right? And is this like what kind of investors are you guys?
That's actually just like one aspect. There's Bitcoin, the currency, and this is what everyone's trading and investing in and holding and hoping to sell in the future. All the underlying value comes from the system behind it, the system that allows the currency to exist, the system that allows this currency to have value and maintain that value. And that's the blockchain, the Bitcoin blockchain. and the Bitcoin network, which is, you know, 10, 11,000 nodes all over the world. So there's this whole global $10 billion industry right now whose sole purpose is to mine Bitcoin, which secures the network, which actually creates, you know, the new coins that are introduced to the network. I buy Bitcoin not to sell it one day. I'm not buying, looking for an exit when Bitcoin hits $1 million. Bitcoin is the exit. Like, I'm exiting the fiat system. No offense, but why would I choose pesos over Bitcoin? Doesn't make any sense. One holds value over time, and the other one guaranteed to lose value over time. Which one would you rather hold for, say, 50 years? One Bitcoin or a million, you know, 3 million pesos? Bitcoin is a way for us to not be financially surveilled by our government or, you know, by big corporations. Without Bitcoin, we will lose the ability to have financial privacy. That's why my conviction is very high that Bitcoin is here to stay. It will be worth a lot more than $1 trillion network over the next 10 years. Right now, you can borrow up to $1 million using Bitcoin as collateral on Coinbase. So Bitcoin is turning into what they call a pristine collateral. Like right now, actually, if you gave me, let's say $1 million and made me choose between buying physical property and buying Bitcoin, I would buy Bitcoin.
Wow, super bullish. Ako kasi if it hits $1 million, I definitely would have sold already at 500,000.
What are you selling it for? I'll give you an example. What if you inherited a property, say in like San Lorenzo or Forbes Park or Dasmariñas Village in Makati, right? And you got it for like cheap. And then now it's worth 500,000 per square meter. Would you sell it? This is a valuable property, right? That can generate income for you. You can use it as collateral. You can sell it, sure. But then what will you buy? Is there another property more valuable?
An island or?
Probably only be able to buy a worse property.
That's true. Like you said, we now have ideas for DeFi and all these use cases. Like we have DAOs, you know, which we will probably discuss in future episodes. And hopefully we do have those services like Coinbase magkaroon dito sa Philippines na we could, you know, stake our Bitcoin and get fiat in return.
You can already do this on, say, there's the Blockfolio FTX app where if you deposit Bitcoin or any crypto there, it can automatically earn, I think, something from like 5 to 8% annual yield. Automatic on your money in the wallet. In that currency. So if you have Bitcoin there, it's earning Bitcoin. If you have Ethereum there, it's earning Ethereum. And it's people are going to say, I have like, you know, $20,000 in the bank earning 0.02%.
Yeah.
Versus I'll just buy a stable coin if I don't like the volatility. For example, let's say I buy some USDC or USDT or something. Or maybe there's going to be a Filipino stable coin in the future. PHP Tether or something. And it can earn more value than, let's say, a bank deposit.
Bitcoin, the digital currency created a dozen years ago as an alternative to cash, is exploding in value. Will it last? Many financial experts dismissed the cryptocurrency as a fad and thought it would ultimately prove worthless. At the end of the day, Friday, its value was over $55,000.
Last week, I think the rate for Bitcoin was $68,000, something like that. No, it was like at an all-time high. And then that was a time when so many people were asking in Facebook groups, like best of the best, like, why should I still buy Bitcoin if I'm starting out? If it's so expensive, why should I bother with it at all?
When you say expensive, it's because of, you know, unit buy. The network is worth $1 trillion and just so happens that it's divided into 21 million Bitcoin. What people don't know is you can actually buy $10 worth of Bitcoin. So if you only have $100, you can convert that $100 into Bitcoin and it will be $100 worth of Bitcoin. It's like, I can't afford a bar of gold, so I'm not going to buy that gold bracelet. You can own some gold. You don't have to buy a bar of gold. You don't have to buy an ounce of gold, for example. You can buy a fraction of gold. in the same way you can buy a fraction of Bitcoin. But the high price of Bitcoin, Andreas Antonopoulos likes to say, the price of Bitcoin is the least interesting thing about it. That's the market telling us what's the most valuable crypto in the world. That's why the price is so high. Even if Bitcoin was $200 per Bitcoin, people were saying it was really expensive. And I know, Harry, you were there.
I was there.
$500 per Bitcoin? That's so expensive. Bitcoin is still undervalued. Like, severely undervalued.
Wow, you think?
No. You have to see it as a whole, right? So the Bitcoin network is a $1 trillion network, meaning all of the Bitcoins in the world are worth $1 trillion, meaning it can only facilitate at any given time around $1 trillion worth of value circulating around. Gold is has an $11 trillion market cap, meaning all the gold in the world today is worth about $11 trillion. Central banks hold gold. You know, a lot of people hold gold as an investment. A lot of gold ETFs and gold investment products are being sold to people so that they can own gold, quote unquote. Do you know anyone who owns gold, like as an investment? I don't know anyone who owns gold as an investment. I know people that own gold jewelry, which is kind of like the same thing. But 11 trillion is 11 times bigger than Bitcoin right now. And you cannot use gold to pay for anything. You cannot transport gold over a communications network. You cannot create program, you know, using gold. Like, gold is not built for a digital network age. It's, you know, it's had its run, 5,000-year run, and Bitcoin is here to replace it, right? And Bitcoin at $1 trillion is really a really small market. That's why, you know, it's being ignored largely in financial markets.
My mind is so blown by all of this, by the way.
There is a mania rising in the country these days about cryptocurrency and how the train is leaving the station, so you better get on.
We're witnessing the monetization of an asset in just 10 years. You know, gold took like 1,000 years to do this, right? And if you look at the history of gold and how it became money, actually kind of like very similar. There's a lot of similarities.
Speaking of dips, Ren, Miguel, you were talking about the crash from 200 to 50. I think people like us, we witnessed all these crashes from
80%, 90% crash.
But yeah, from 1,000, you mentioned kanina 200, it went to 1,000 and then it crashed back to 200, you know.
Yeah, over a period of 2 years.
Yeah, I remember when it went to 30, I was like, should I sell? And now it's back up.
Volatility is a very important part of the price discovery, the market discovery, what this is worth.
Are you saying that volatility means it is a healthy sign?
Let's say you have an asset that is stable in price, going up all the time. Everybody's going to want a piece of that. People will start buying it like crazy. And it will shoot up. You know, it will go on a rocket ship. And then people will start selling. It's going to crash. So volatility will happen, right? If you have a stable asset that is boring and doesn't go up or down, not many people are going to want that. With volatility, it shows it's something that people want. And you'll go through these cycles of volatility. You can't mistake it for bubbles, right? Because bubbles will go up vertically and then crash and never go back up. With Bitcoin, volatility is part of that growth. Volatility is how the market discovers what it's worth at any given time. It can go over that, it can go under that, but if you look at the trajectory of Bitcoin over the last 12 years, it's a steady curve going up.
How do you guys keep calm?
Sanay na. No, Miguel, like we call it winters because there won't, like, it's just going sideways or going down for a long while before these bull runs, itong mga skyrocketing of the price from 10,000 to 20 to 50, 60. But we do go through months. Last bull run was 2017, early 2018. It went up all the way to 20 and then crashed down to 3K.
Number one, if you're getting scared, and then not just Bitcoin, but any investment, you're probably overexposed. You're probably putting in too much money that you need to pay bills for or you need to use, you know, to live. That's not how it should be when you're investing in something, right? You need to, like, have a strategy, have an allocation, and have conviction in your investment. So if you're getting scared of these dips, you're probably spending money that you're not supposed to spend Bitcoin. If you have the luxury of putting in, you know, a lot of money into it, then that's great. But also, it really depends on, I know people who are ultra rich, but wouldn't touch Bitcoin because they're scared of the volatility. But also, I know a lot of people who understand it, right? And have very high conviction and pretty much convert all their money into Bitcoin as much as possible. The dips are happy buying opportunity. I'm looking at the long-term picture, right? I'm looking at not just 5 years, not just 10 years, you know, longer than that. I only really actually started saving money because of this. You know, I used to be one of those people that had credit card debt. I used to be one of those people that lived, you know, on their paycheck, spending it like crazy. Didn't really understand the whole financial system and how it works. And actually, Bitcoin opened my eyes to that. And I became a saver, you know, a holder of Bitcoin because of that. And it made me value actually money so much more than I used to. When your income increased, your lifestyle increases too. With Bitcoin, it's the opposite. When your income increases, you still maintain your old standard of living so you can buy more Bitcoin.
I think this is the first time I'm hearing someone talk about this way, that it is something more life-changing.
I think I learned so much about finance and being, you know, in financial literacy, which is very important
for
Filipinos to learn. And, you know, for example, I learned about dollar cost averaging, the concept of dollar cost averaging from Miguel. I think he wrote about it before in a blog post. That was never taught to me in school. Tinuturo lang mag-ipon ka for a rainy day, but they never really teach us about investing.
Right.
But because of crypto, I also got into stocks and I started looking into VULs and other forms of investments. You know, natutunan ko to because of crypto and, you know, concepts like dollar cost averaging and investing only what you can afford to lose. These are things I learned because, you know, I learned it the hard way, but I still learned it, diba?
That's right. That's right. And Bitcoin allows anybody, literally anybody, to put any amount of money that they can set it aside, you know, because it retains value. It's not losing value to inflation, for example.
Are we in a crypto podcast or are we in Oprah's Super Soul Conversations? Grabe naman you're sharing, guys. If you guys were to give, not investment advice, but any type of advice for people who are about to go into this journey, kunyari, there's like a Crypto 101 class in Ateneo, and you guys were the guest speakers to very impressionable kids. What would your one piece of advice be?
You know, we've been talking about invest only what you can afford to lose, and really just learn before you... Learn about the technology, learn about what you're investing in before you invest. I think it's the same whether you're investing in real estate or stocks or some form of fund or mutual fund. Parang you gotta learn about what you're investing in before you enter.
Yeah, education before speculation. Harry's right. Like, if you're gonna invest in anything, understand it first. Know what you're getting into, have a plan. Don't jump into something because, you know, somebody made $10 into $1 million and you want to jump on that train, right? Understand the history of money. Money makes the world go round, right? And we don't understand money. They think that when they put their money in the bank, it's there, you know? They think that when they take out a loan, they're borrowing other people's money. A lot of people still think that money's backed by gold this day, you know? So understand how money works and it's going to help you. Like, it's really going to open your mind to a lot of things.
Talking to you makes me want to withdraw all of my money out of my bank accounts and just throw it in the wind.
Can you tell me what Bitcoin is or not?
Bitcoin is a flat circle and everything we ever do or have ever done, we will do again.
That's a line from True Detective.
I would love to ask the two of you, since you guys have been in the scene since like 2010s, and I'm sure you've also shed tears, but what do you think is the future of Bitcoin?
For me, I don't know, it's happening now, no? It's really, we're seeing companies like Tesla or MicroStrategy, in, you know, putting their balance sheet into Bitcoin. Or countries like El Salvador, where it's already legal tender, the qualities we mentioned, that it's unstoppable, it's permissionless, it's not controlled by just one person, it's starting to be adopted na by an actual state. And I think the future looks bright. There will be resistance in terms of adoption, or you know, we see a lot of markets na very parang resistant to the change. But I think it's inevitable. And I think money is just one application, which you know, we talked about NFTs in the previous episode, and we'll talk about even more applications in future episodes.
As a society, humanity is like transitioning into a digital age. You know, we're leaving the analog age. And we're kind of like right now in the intersection of those two worlds, right? I believe that the invention of Bitcoin is as important as, you know, the printing press or the internet itself. Bitcoin will become much bigger than we can even imagine it will be. You know, I would quote Andreas Antonopoulos, Bitcoin is not just the money of the internet. It's also the internet of money. People think of Bitcoin as a currency, like something to trade, something to sell. But it's really the internet of money. You know, what the internet did for communication, for media, for publishing, you know, it decentralized all of those things. It empowered individuals. You know, it allowed the free flow of information because there were no more centralized gatekeepers. You know, if you wanted to publish something before, you'd have to go through a newspaper or go through a media, you know, conglomerate, and they could control the narratives and they could control the information that was going around. With Bitcoin, it's finance, it's ownership, it's trade, it's trust. All of these things are becoming decentralized. All of these things are becoming given to the individual, right? So it's allowing people to move value all over the world freely, in the same way the internet allowed us to move information freely all over the world. And look what the internet has done for society, right? And the only thing missing in the internet all this time in the last 30 years was really a native currency for the internet. And that's Bitcoin. Bitcoin is the native currency.
And before we end this episode, we just want to remind everyone that we are not giving away financial investment advice, people. Diba, Harry, what are we doing?
We're just, you know, passionate people learning about this new technology, spreading what we learned then.
Yes, we're just helping people with the, giving them the right tools to help them in their journey into this rabbit hole, so to speak. But thank you so much, Miguel. This was great. I feel like I went through like some sort of therapy session or some Reiki healing because with all the nuggets of wisdom that you gave. And of course, Miguel, in case you gain new fans from this episode, where can people find you?
I'm usually just on Twitter at Miguel Coneta.
Again, thank you so much. And Harry, where can we find you?
Harry Initiative on Twitter and Instagram.
And I am Mel_Alcaraz on Twitter and on Instagram. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you in the next episode.